So welcome back for the final session for today. And can I introduce the chair for this session, CEO Emma Bennison.
Thank you, everybody, and thanks, John. Hopefully John's going to come and be on this panel. Oh, there he is. Yep, that's good. We've heard in the previous session from the different blindness service providers, and we wanted now to explore what the future might look like in terms of the blindness sector and what service provision might look like in the future, and particularly looking at how we might collaborate into the future. So particularly looking at the roles of the Australian Blindness Forum, ABF, which was mentioned earlier, Vision 2020 Australia, which also has a significant role to play in this space, and of course BCA. You know, I think you've probably heard of us by now, and it would appear that we have a valued role to play in this space as well, which is great. So that's what we're here to talk about this afternoon. Dale, can you hear me yet? It's a bit hard to do this without Dale. He's quite important. But on the panel today, we have Judith Abbott, who is the CEO of Vision 2020 Australia, and I've just established that Judith is staying for dinner, so you'll be able to chat with her over dinner, which will be great, because she's really great to chat to. She's very fun.
No pressure, Emma. Thank you very, very much.
So that'll be great. We've also got John Simpson. You might not know who he is, but he's I don't know, but it is possible. He's the president of Blind Citizens Australia. It's a small organisation, doesn't do a lot. But
yes, you know. I joined them after the session before and they made me president immediately.
And we have Aidan Poorfolks to thank for that. And we've also got Dale Cleaver, who I don't know if
he
can hear
Anna?
Me. I hope he can. But Dale wasn't able to be with us today, but he is, in fact, the CEO of Guide Dogs New South Wales, but he's also the current chair of the Australian Blindness Forum. And I guess for the sake of transparency, we should also add that John Simpson and myself are also directors on the board of the Australian Blindness Forum. BCA gets two seats on that board, which is great. And John and I have the privilege to be part of that. So that's that. I'm still worried about Dale.
Emma.
Yes.
Emma, while we're killing a bit of time, yes, while we try and find Dale, yes. I guess the other thing to say is John Simpson doesn't get just two bites of the cherry.
No, you're right.
Because
thank
he
you.
Is also chair of our Independence and Participation Committee at Vision 2020 Australia. So John is quite ubiquitous, I think it's fair to say.
John is very
just
easily...
just looked that up in the dictionary.
John is very easily... yes. Oh, Dale, are you here? Can you hear me?
Hi.
How
yes,
are you?
Yes, we're hearing you in the room now, Dale.
I hope. Thank you for being here, and I'm sorry about the issues with the Zoom. I've
That's
just.
Okay. I'm sorry, I can't be there in person.
Yeah, so are we. It would be great to have you, but I understand that you had somewhere else very important to be, so that's okay.
And could we give Dale Cleaver a bit more a level in the room? Thank you.
So, Dale, I should probably just alert you to the fact that we had someone else on Zoom this morning and it didn't go so well. Every time he went to say something of significance, the internet dropped out. I hope that doesn't happen to you. So I guess one way of avoiding
that
is...
I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't too. But one way of avoiding it might be that if you're going to say anything significant, just sort of pause for a moment before you speak. But seriously, so I hope you heard what I have been saying, Dale, but I've just basically been introducing everybody on the panel and just setting the scene to say that we thought, given that we heard from service providers earlier in the sector, in the session, that this session's really about what does the future look like. So that's where I want to start. Wanted to start with you, Judith, if I could, just with the question of what do you think service provision is going to look like for people who are blind or vision impaired, you know, in the future? As far into the future as you like. Just do a bit of crystal ball gazing.
Fantastic. And I actually did want to start by paying my respects to traditional owners of the land that we're meeting on today and acknowledging their traditional ownership of the land and paying respects to elders past, present and emerging, and any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are in the room today. So I am the CEO of Vision 2020 Australia, which you might know is a peak body with about 50 organisations working in eye health and vision. And so I sit in the land where I see quite a different set of perspectives, from the perspectives of blindness and rehabilitation providers through to the perspectives of eye care professionals, the perspectives of researchers, and quite a range of different views of things. I come out of government, so I'd spent a lot of time trying to work within the NDIS and the aged care framework before I came into this role. And to answer Emma's question, I think the aspiration for the future is a future that delivers on what the promises have been made for people who are blind and have low vision. And so I think what that looks like is a future where things change to the point that there is absolute genuine control and involvement and participation of people with blindness and low vision in shaping every element of the services that they receive. I think we'll need to see some significant changes in the funding and arrangements that exist both in NDIS and the aged care system for that to be realised. And I think that is going to be challenging for governments who are kind of probably used to getting things within a budget and trying to convince a Treasury official that they should pay more for a service can be really challenging, a challenging argument to win, regardless of whether it's the right thing to do or not. But I think the pressure will be sufficient, and we will certainly be doing a lot of work to try and push that forward. I think that there'll be a really big challenge in terms of future service provision around to what degree, what role does technology play versus what are the core things that people need to do and everyone in community needs to do for a system to work well for everybody to participate, including people who have blind and low vision. So quite a bit of the discussion, you know, I've been having today has been with people talking about the promise of technology, but the criticality of not losing the core capacity to participate and being fully reliant on technology. So I think that's going to challenge service providers, participants and everyone involved in the system into the future. How's that for a start?
Oh, that's fantastic. I knew you'd deliver. Thank you. Now, Dale, I want to come to you, and I wonder if you could actually start, because it strikes me that the Australian Blindness Forum has been mentioned a number of times today, but I'm very conscious that a number of people in the room or listening via the stream may not be aware of what the ABF actually is and how it works. So could you perhaps start by explaining a little bit about the ABF and then answer my original question, which was about the what the future might look like in terms of service provision?
Yep. Thanks Emma. The Australian Blindness Forum has been around for a number of years and is a member organisation which is made up of essentially the blindness organisations in Australia, and it has some associate memberships as well. HumanWare is one of those, and BCA is the other. And its role is around advocacy and policy, particularly in relation to its consumer group and its consumers in general. A lot of its work has been around policy work and advocacy work, particularly with government, and generally around access as well from time to time. The board is made up of CEOs and or their representatives, and BCA also has sat on that board as board members. So it's got a long history. It's been quite strong, I think, as well as trying to focus as much as it can on that consumer view of it and using that lived experience where it's possible as part of its advocacy. So it is a member, so it is an organisational view, but I would like to think that for a good part of its focus, certainly during my short term as chairman, I think it's been important, whatever that advocacy is to come at it from a client perspective.
Great.
Did you want me to move on to the next part of your question?
I'd love it if you could do that. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think this is possibly one of the reasons why I was asked to join, particularly as the chair. In around September last year, the member organisations had a long conversation about how can it collectively get greater impact. And, of course, concern, as it, I guess is the case for all small organisations, around long-term sustainability. The CEO representatives asked at that time for the board to look at whether it was possible to actually merge with, to consider merging or integrating with Vision 2020, reflecting on that as an opportunity in that the majority of members of ABF were also members of Vision 2020 Australia. The concern, I think, then of the CEO member organisations was that in a tough times around sustainability, they saw some benefits of bringing two parts of the organisation together. I think these things sometimes are in time, and I think the CEO organisations, particularly with the change of leadership and some board representation as well, they felt that it was a good time to consider that integration being a positive thing going forward. And obviously there's been a number of steps in considering the pros and cons of that since September. But maybe if I leave it at that and then you come back to me with other questions related to that.
Yeah, we will talk more about that. But before we do, just want to come to John, and in terms of, you know, from BCA's perspective, we've just adopted the blindness service provider expectations policy, of course, and talked a bit about the importance of, you know, broadening that policy over time to include service providers outside the blindness sector potentially. But what do you think the future holds in terms of consumer representation and the service provision?
I'm really heartened by the conversations that are happening in the sector, because there is a genuine recognition from all parties that effective advocacy representation needs the input and on a balanced basis of people with lived experience of blindness and vision impairment, as well as the expertise of those people who manage and plan and operate various services. So I think that balance is what's so important. I think the other thing that's important in this conversation is that, to my mind, and BCA had looked at this over a number of years, but to my mind, the blindness, low vision, vision impairment sector wasn't doing itself justice by having a number of, quote, peak organisations, because that was confusing to government and to major corporations and so forth that we were trying to work with. And these conversations about bringing the organisations together, in fact, started some time ago. And in fact, I had initial conversations both at the ABF board and with the then CEO of Vision 2020 about this need to rationalise some time ago. But I think that Dale is right, that the opportunity to do that occurred around September last year. And I think that the progress and the genuine commitment to build partnerships and integrate the position of lived experience, I think, has moved forward at what I actually think is an outstanding pace, Emma.
Yeah, thanks, John. It's been very heartening even today, in fact, to hear of some of those, important collaborations that have already started to occur, for example, between, you know, the guide dogs organisations, for example, and BCA, but also, you know, some of the work that we've been doing even around audio description, I think is a really good example of where the sector's really coming together and working really hard to make the change that we need.
Emma, can I just add that I think that one of the things we shouldn't lose sight of here is, in fact, that the collaboration started quite some years ago, specifically between BCA and Vision Australia. And I know Michael Simpson is in the room, so I just want to take the opportunity to acknowledge the part that he played in developing that first partnership agreement between Vision Australia and Blind Citizens Australia. Yeah. And, of course, these other partnerships have grown as a result of us having that one in place and being able to use that as an example when we've spoken to other organisations.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Judith, you wanted to add something?
I was just appreciating the irony that I was kind of coming at the question as what it will be like for people, and you guys were coming at it as what it will be like for organisations. So it was a beautiful yes. reversal of roles yes. for a few moments there.
That is
such but I was also thinking about a very concrete measure of what I think our collective success would be in the future for the sector, would be if we're at the place where there is absolutely an explosion in the pool of people who are involved in and shaping every element of policy. So every meeting with the minister, the majority of people in the room are people who are blind or vision impaired, that we actually really start to live what we say matters in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
For something like my organisation, where we have a very broad base, it's been a really important conversation, and one that our board was having as recently as Thursday, about how do we start to really build that and what are all the things that sit around that to make that happen and sustain it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, otherwise there's always that risk that you end up with three people that get dragged to every single meeting there is, which does seem like a cruel and unusual punishment, really. I think another measure of our collective success will be that we are more than the sum of our parts. So Emma and I already tend to talk a bit with audio description, very clear decision made by people involved that was absolutely something where BCA should lead, but we should use the breadth of the Vision 2020 Australia network to really back it up and expand the reach and do everything we can collectively. So that takes a bit of effort to move from us all doing our bits to doing it in a different way, but that's, I think, another measure of success and what will take us somewhere different in the future when we are a relatively small part of two very big systems that are not really designed for the specific needs of people who are blind or vision impaired.
Mm-hmm. I think what Dale alluded to before about, you know, the timing being right in terms of the closer working relationships between the ABF and Vision 2020 is actually true of just the way that we're collaborating generally. I think there've been some leadership changes and various other things have occurred that have just helped the sector kind of really come together in a way that I don't think I've seen for a very long time, if ever. So that's really exciting. Dale, I just wanted to come back to you perhaps to expand a little bit and you as well, Judith, about the closer working relationships and particularly what that might mean from a consumer perspective, because everyone sitting in this audience is quite probably kind of going, well, that's nice, but what does it actually mean for us? What are we going to get out of it? You know, how's it going to work? So it'd be great if you could start, Dale, on that.
Sorry, you wanted me to start with that?
Yes, please.
Yep. Look, one of the things that we've done is we've worked quite closely with Judith and the team at Vision 2020 to think about what are the aspects, and as you know, we've worked with you also around that, to go, what are the aspects of, for example, of the current and the past ABF work, to go, what fits and what's the role of BCA in that versus what might elements of current ABF work might sit with Vision 2020. And so we've had we've been developing a integration transition plan with Vision 2020 to actually identify those aspects and to ensure that the areas that we've been concerned about, particularly ABF has been quite concerned with things such as our focus with NDIS and the challenges and the opportunities that that has presented and how we make sure that in a new organisation that continues, how our focus around things like technology, access, aged care, employment and education and access, audio description, transport and infrastructure, those sorts of things continue to be priority areas. A part of our process through the development of the transition program and our conversations between the two boards and the CEOs and chairs has been to ensure that those things do continue and that it continues to come through from that lived experience that both Judith and I have actually talked about. So there's been a number of conversations, including that transition plan, where those things have been discussed. We've also, in this last period, been developing the election platform. And so during that period, we've also been working quite closely in being clear about where what our advocacy platform and policy platform has been focused on versus Vision 2020, and it's been quite aligned. And hopefully what BCA have also felt is that we've been having that conversation with them along that way to make sure that nothing actually falls between the cracks and that there's adequate kind of coverage of all the issues and there's not a loss of anything through what might be an integration of the two organisations.
Mm. Yep, excellent. Thank you, Dale. Judith, do you want to add anything to that?
I think Dale covered it beautifully.
Yeah,
so
yeah, he did.
Onwards and upwards.
And so, John, from BCA's perspective, and I guess also just touching on what we already have in terms of our MOUs with blindness service providers already, because a lot of people won't know what the detail of those are. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what our commitments are in terms of closer collaboration and what it is that, you know, BCA members can expect?
Sure. So to talk about what's in place at the moment, when we talk about MOUs, they, of course, include financial support from the blindness service sector. But the MOUs are designed very much to go far beyond that. And while I don't want to discount the finances, because Dale might hear me, I think that there's a real value in the MOUs also in the context that they embody things like exchanging information, providing opportunities, for example, for the agency representatives to be here at the convention as part of that that package and that learning opportunity. On the other hand, for us to be able to access staff development and those sort of development activities within the organisation, there are practical considerations such as the use of space. And I know that Angela, who's based in Brisbane, has been able to use space at Guide Dogs Queensland. Thank you to Michael for that support. Vision Australia have often provided us with meeting space and facilities and that sort of thing. The very fact that this convention is being broadcast in part by the Vision Australia radio network through their Iris outlet is a direct result of that collaboration. It's not spelt out word for word in the document, but it's part of the spirit of that that brings us to this point. If we look to the future, I think it's fair to say that when these discussions really started to bubble up last year, Emma and I, as CEO and president of the organisation, and then beyond that with our board, really felt that we needed to think quite clearly about what we could bring to the relationship in the future. So there's a document that's been circulated and is still being discussed and so forth, but it includes very clear commitments from BCA to ensure that we are as effective as we possibly can be in representing the issue, the interests and issues of people who are blind and vision impaired from a whole host of things. So our work in the area of cultural diversity is a direct product of that style of thinking by the board. Our whole philosophy around capacity building and leadership development are all tied back to the fact that if BCA is going to be even more prominent in this area of advocacy and representation, then we need to make sure that we're resourcing ourselves and our knowledge base, and therefore able to pass on knowledge and opinions, the diversity of opinions and so forth. So there's a real commitment, Emma, to that sort of what we might call, you know, capacity building, leadership development work across the organisation.
And John, do you want to just expand on, you know, what happens particularly in the, you know, in terms of the current MOUs, but if there's a difference, if there's a difference of opinion or a disagreement, how do we deal with that? Because, I mean, I know that has been an issue in the past, and sometimes members have felt like, you know, maybe BCA wouldn't speak up about issues that might arise. So do you want to talk a bit about that and how we deal with that?
Sorry, was that...
Yes, it was to you. In terms of what happens if there's a disagreement and
so these agreements that are in place now, and this has been the case with Vision Australia for quite some years, and it's the case with the others, and certainly part of our commitment to the future, is that the organisations respect, the organisations being the parties to the MOU, respect the integrity and the freedom to speak out of each party. We have what I might call the courtesy clauses in there that we try and, if we have concerns, we raise them initially with the organisation. We don't, as a matter of respect, we don't go to the media or go public about something until we've given the other party the opportunity to respond to whatever the concern might be. There are, of course, clauses there about dispute resolution, but it'd be a sad day if we ever had to implement one of those. And of course there are provisions that the one-to-one, the bipartisan arrangements could be terminated at some point. But the whole basis is built on, from BCA's point of view, one of our four tenets, and that is that we will work with all of the service providers, but we will always ensure that we're in a position where we can never be controlled or overly influenced by any one organisation. So it's about getting that balance right among the agencies. And this is why, another reason why these moves towards a more national consolidated approach are important to, from a BCA perspective, because they ensure that while those bipartisan relationships are very important and key to the thing, that there is a broader, if you like, sector mandate to our collaboration.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Unless any of you have got any other comments that you want to make, I might open it up for questions, because I'm sure that there will be some. Judith or Dale, do you have any other comments you'd like to make before I do that?
None.
It's Dale here. The only additional comment I would make is that I think there's a need for both, you know, each different group, whether that's organisations, whether that's consumer groups such as BCA is concerned, I think each has slightly different mandates and needs. But I think there's an important thing about regularly coming together and working together on policy issues together where that makes sense. So I think while they have different mandates, there's also should always be an opportunity to come together.
Yeah, that's really important. And it's one of the things that's definitely been on the agenda, hasn't it, in terms of the transition and how we make sure that continues to happen, because it's really important that there's information exchange and opportunities for discussion and debate and all of those things. So, yeah, that's a really important point, Dale.
And for the kinds of policy changes that we want and the kind of advocacy that we're going to have to do over the next while, that collective voice, wherever we can, we have to get to the point where there are so many voices at every point saying the same thing that it's really, really hard to ignore it.
Yeah, impossible to ignore.
Well, it's always possible, but that becomes increasingly important because we're really going to be challenging some of the existing settings. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to open it up for questions now. So have we got some mic runners?
Yep.
Has anyone got any questions?
Yes.
Good. Who? Susan Thompson.
No.
Just hold
Radio
on.
Radio mic, Dale. Susan, hello. Is that switched on at the bottom? Is the red light on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
There you are.
Forgive me, Helen, if I've kind of lost something along the way. I'm just interested to learn more about where Vision 2020 sits on the spectrum now. My understanding, is that, you know, while ABF and its members have been about helping people to live with blindness and low vision, 2020 in the past has been more about curing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering how those two fit together, or is the work between Vision 2020 and ABF kind of a separate arm, or like how does that all fit together?
That's a really good question. Judith?
So it's Judith, and I'm more than happy to answer that. So you are absolutely right that the genesis of Vision 2020 came out of a World Health Organization commitment to the right to sight and to end preventable blindness. But I think it's fair to say I've only been with Vision 2020 Australia for 9 months, but looking at its genesis and how it's evolved, it really has two main arms to its mission now. The first is to eliminate preventable blindness, and the second is to maximise opportunities for people who are blind or vision impaired to participate. And those two sit in quite a complementary way now. And so we have kind of four main policy committees through which we do a lot of our work. One of those is the Independence and Participation Committee, which is the one that John chairs. But what that does is it brings together a lot of the people, a lot of the organisations who are members of the Australian Blindness Forum, but it also brings together the Ophthalmology College, the optometrists, some of the researchers and others. So what it does is it places the issues and opportunities around blindness and rehabilitation services in that broader kind of eye health and vision care setting. And so it means that we do a combination of things that are both policy work and advocacy work that very much sits... there's a huge overlap between what the Australian Blindness Forum does and what Vision 2020 Australia does in its independence and participation space. Probably 80 to 90% of our work is common. But the other thing it does is some of those connecting pieces about how do we make those systems work better for people who are blind or have... or vision impaired. So, for example, John's been involved in some low vision pathways work that's been a really practical way of trying to connect in ophthalmology and optometry and orthoptics to the improving the experience and navigation along the lines. Is that a fair summary, John, from your experience?
Yes, it is, Judith, but I'd add to it the fact that, firstly, from a personal perspective, I made a commitment to work with Vision 2020 Australia. I hate to say it, Judith, but I'm in my fourth year.
Doesn't time fly when you're having fun, John?
And I did so because of this, the role that the Independence and Participation Committee plays. And yes, part of the frustration in the early days was that we were talking about the same things at an IBC meeting as we were at an ABF meeting, and sometimes the same people. And ask Chris Edwards, he's one of those who's sat in on both of those. But having the broader eye healthcare sector involved actually does help us in developing our positions and advocating for them. Organisations like Optometry Australia, they sit in this space and they're working, or many of their practitioners are working in the low vision area. And to have them participating in discussions and them supporting things like the audio description campaign just gives us a much stronger presence in our advocacy work that I think was important. And in fact, for those like Tony Starkey and I who have been around long enough, we know that this is the wheel going full circle, because the ANCB, the Australian National Council of the Blind, or of and for the blind as it changed its name at one stage, brought those partnerships together. We lost that, unfortunately, with the demise of that organisation, and the ABF was born out of that, but with a narrower focus. So it is really good to have that wider involvement. And, you know, think about Orthoptus, for example, and the strength of Orthoptus working in our service agencies, and having their representative organisation at the table again adds so much. Think about organisations that are disease or eye condition specific. The Macular Degeneration Foundation, the Glaucoma Australia, Retinitis Pigmenta, or Retina Australia as they call themselves these days. Having all those parties at the table really does strengthen the position. Mm.
Excellent. More questions?
It feels a bit like 4:30 on a Saturday, doesn't it,
so.
Folks?
I think so too. Shall
we just name it for what it is?
Yeah. Yep.
I think so.
Oh, there's a question.
One
back.
More? Okay.
It's like Please. Being the last gig before afternoon tea.
It's hard.
It's a real tension,
sell.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Hi, it's Renata speaking again. And actually, I'm speaking more from a background of having engaged in this sector previously and a very long conversation with an ophthalmologist in India at the APB General Assembly that prompted me to work on disability inclusion more broadly. Anyway, I really wanted to build off a question that came in the earlier session around diabetes-related awareness. And I was curious, I know you've just mentioned a number of organisations that are working on eye health, and how can we also make sure that organisations that are developing referral pathways have accessible systems and processes and information as well. Obviously, Intopia is happy to help with that too, but I'd be really curious to hear from your perspective too.
Can I start on that one?
Yep.
Because I was actually having some follow-up conversations in the break. So one of the things that's kind of interesting around Vision 2020 Australia is that Diabetes Australia and several of the state and territory affiliates are members as well. And we work closely with Diabetes Australia on a set of things at the moment. So I've already just dropped a note to the CEO to follow up on that particular point around accessibility of equipment and the like. So I think the answer to your question is that through the kind of broader networks we have, we can start to really tackle some of those things and raise awareness. And I think it's a real challenge for, and it's a real opportunity for something like Vision 2020 Australia, is we have lots of points of contact, and making sure we never miss an opportunity to really both model best practice around accessibility, but also hold the people we're working with to account and follow up when we see it not happening. Mm-hmm. So we had a really practical example of that. We had a CEO strategy day a couple of months ago, and we dutifully went through and looked at a whole lot of interesting research that we thought might be helpful for CEOs. But when we went to get the accessible versions of the 12 documents that we had identified, a grand total of one was accessible. And that was accessible because we called them up and said, do you have an accessible version? So I think there's a really important educative piece in there, which is there's 12 conversations about actually here's a thing you can do that's going to make a really practical difference. Mm. And our staff are doing it in some quite interesting ways. So one of our managers is a fashion blogger on the side and does lots on Instagram. So she's got this whole fashion blogging community now labelling their Instagram documents and understanding the difference. So I think it's a big and a hard ask, but I think if we really actively take all those opportunities as they go along and we push along on those, we'll have quite an impact. And really, I think there's also that kind of related thing, which is whilst we're very passionate about eyes and vision, a lot of the policy settings and drivers are moving towards integrated and broader approaches to care. So as we push further into that space and connecting with other organisations that can help us achieve our collective goals, there's also the chance to educate them, bring them along and push on that as well.
Yes, and that's interesting, isn't it? Because that's another reason why our blindness service provider expectations policy is quite clear about the need for people who are blind or vision impaired to be in leadership positions in our service provider organisations, because obviously, you know, were I not the CEO of BCA, or it doesn't have to be me, could have been anyone, but of course then Vision 2020 wouldn't have possibly given consideration to whether those documents were accessible, because they wouldn't have needed to. So I think that's a really interesting point as well, that and a way that BCA, you know, just by getting out of bed in the morning kind of value adds to you know, to this conversation, because I think, and I think it's one of the reasons why service providers are, in many cases, giving a lot more thought to how do they bring people who are blind or vision impaired on board. And I think that's fantastic. I have conversations with them all the time about it, and I think it's great. And most of them are really serious about it, which is fantastic. Now, any other questions? Otherwise, I think we're going to wrap up.
Yes.
Yes?
Over here.
Sure.
Thank you. And it's Michael from Tasmania. I've just been thinking about the general demographics of the people in this room, and one of the things I see is sadly lacking is children and young people. And in some respects, they are the future of any push. Now, please excuse me if I haven't noticed that you're here. But my question is there, are there organisations or are there particular divisions within the organisations that already exist which specifically cater for children, teenagers and youth in the area of blindness? And the second part about it is, are there provisions within the organisations for people who care for, support or are partners of people who are blind to also have a voice in the sector? Because they're the people who notice us and what we are doing and our struggles, and if they have a voice as well, that's another voice at the table that the people can't ignore.
Yeah, sure. I'll ask John to speak to that first, and then I might get Dale to also respond. Yeah.
So speaking specifically from a Blind Citizens Australia point of view, it's fair to say that we have provisions in our rules, our constitution, that provide for both junior members and also for associate members. I'd be the first to say that we haven't addressed that part of our population, their needs as much as we should in recent years. These things tend to come in cycles, and a few, well, probably 10, 15 years ago, there were in fact several parent-based organisations around the country. There was an organisation called VICPAR, Vision Impaired Children's Parents Association in Victoria. Is that my wind-up?
Yeah, we're all getting a calendar reminder. We've got to be somewhere in 15 minutes, John.
It's probably on my computer then that you're getting that.
I could hear a cuckoo clock and I thought I couldn't figure out what it was.
So we are, the BCA board have in fact made a commitment to re-engage in this among a number of other areas. It will take us some time. One of the reasons for that, and it's not an excuse, is that the numbers we are dealing with are quite small. Two-thirds of blindness in Western countries like Australia is late onset. It doesn't occur until people are well over the age of 50, and in fact, most cases, over retirement age. So if you talk about population numbers, the numbers are quite small. So the challenge is to get to those people, particularly when the systems are now so decentralised. So we are working with organisations like the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children in New South Wales to try and address that and use the existing networks that they and Vision Australia and Guide Dogs Australia and so forth have. But it's a challenging area that I. And the first to say we need to give higher priority.
Yeah, I'll just add to that a couple of things. First of all, we are, yes, that's one of the two things.
Yes.
First of all, I totally agree. We are not doing as well as we should be in this area. But it's not because we're not interested in it. And in fact, we are working to train people up as mentors. We are working to provide leadership training to people, some of whom are younger people, but not all. We are also providing opportunities for young people to attend the Enchanted Hills summer camp in the US. And the other thing that we're doing, which we haven't talked a lot about, and I will add more to this tomorrow morning when I speak, is that we've just recently moved Crystal Malcolm, who unfortunately isn't here, but we've just moved her into a position as a national membership coordinator. And so what that means is that her job is specifically to assist us to connect with groups that we haven't traditionally done well at connecting with, and that includes younger people. It also includes people from, diverse backgrounds, people living in regional and remote communities. I mean, she's got a very small task. It shouldn't be too hard. But I cannot think of a better person to do it. She is an extraordinary networker. She's also, a younger person herself, and so I think it's going to be fantastic to see where she takes that position.
And she should be able to get it done by the time her recently born baby is at university.
Yeah. So no pressure, Crystal, if you're listening. I hope you are listening. So we are very aware of it, Michael, and we are trying to address it, but it is going to take a long time, so I'm not pretending that we're going to address it tomorrow. Dale, do you want to talk about it from a service provider perspective?
Sure. If I talk broadly, Michael, I think there's a number of blindness and low vision organisations that are supporting younger Australians through their services. I think your question around representation is a really good one. I'm aware that, in the Guide Dogs Australia network, that is something that increasingly is getting closer attention by the CEOs of those organisations. If I talk just in terms of, and I'm taking my ABF hat, I'm putting on my Guide Dogs New South Wales hat, I know that our recent regional advisory, client advisory panels, we have sought to include parents of children, ideally in those. Whether in fact there's more improvement in that on that representation, I think there needs to be. But I think it's early days. But I think most of us get the importance of it, and the importance of that in shaping the future services that we may need to deliver.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Dale. So we've run out of time. And so I really just want to thank Judith Abbott and Dale Cleaver for being here and for providing us with a bit of an overview of where things are at in terms of the future of blindness service provision. And I also want to thank John because he's still here, and that's really really good. But seriously, I do want to thank John for providing a BCA perspective as well. That's really important. And now I am going to hand over to John because he's going to make an announcement.
So just to put my other hat back on for the time being, we are at the end of today, and I add my thanks to particularly to Dale for making himself available. I know that Saturdays when you're at home are usually full of other commitments, and to Judith for coming down and being part of the convention, because I think having both you and other people representing the sector here really is part of this whole networking that we are so strongly in favour of. We're at the end of the day, and as has already been said, let's finish the day with a little acknowledgement of one of our sponsors. Thanks, Dale.
Listen. That's what we always do first before anything else, because that's the only way to truly understand you, your needs, your goals, and the way you want services delivered. From specialist children's and adults orientation and mobility to occupational therapy and vision service professionals, we're always listening. Chat to us on 1800 804 805 and together we can find your way. Guide Dogs Australia, proud supporter of the BCA Convention.